there's a juxtaposing, obviously, that happens.
Mm-hmm.
There's a dichotomy. To you, just as a writer, do you really feel that that tension is really important to your writing? I mean, we all write out of our source in some manner.
Mm-hmm.
But that tension comes into the writing, and the juxtaposition of not just the inner life and the outer experience, but as you say, you write from history. And when you're trying to pull history forward into the now, how important is that tension in the work you produce?
I think there always is tension. There's always irony. You know, in maybe all of our lives, maybe, you know, but for personally for me, I am constantly living that story. I have a continuous sort of narrative that I can't separate myself from. So we're just kind of discussing this earlier about a lot of indigenous poets, like how can our work be seen out as poetry in the general public, or does it always have to sort of, you know, be put into a little box? And like I guess it would be the African American poet, or if you're a woman poet, you know, like you're constantly part of some theory or attached to some sort of theory. I think I would like to move away from these. Like I think Shapeshift is all about that juxtaposition, is the narrative. And when I left the reservation, I certainly had a consciousness that was not replicated outside off the reservation. So I remember when I first left, I went to town and I did all these things, you know, but when I physically moved to another space, I would try to joke with you know, because joking is like pretty big in the native community, and I would try to joke with you know, other people, and they just wouldn't get it. And I would just feel really dumb, you know. Oh, like, he's supposed to say this, you know, or you're supposed to react this way. So, like, none of my jokes were working with these people, because I think the worldview was so different. But then now, as I sort of, I've been living in Tucson for about 5 years. My worldview is changing. It's really shifting, and I am writing, not as a, I mean. Because here I think I was so close to my home, my life on the reservation. Now the new work, there is tension, but it's a different kind of tension. You know, it seems to be less, the further you move away from it, the less you are to say it's them or it's those guys. You know, that's where the conflict is. Because you become a part of that conflict too. So it's kind of, I feel like I'm inside that sort of space, and it becomes more economics, I guess.
Just one more quick question.
Okay.
When you're writing, one of the things that I experience in hearing you is that there is an element of the unexpected that pops up,
mm-hmm.
but you can't tell when it's going to happen.
Yeah.
So it's not as if it seems to happen, and that's part of the juxtaposition, but not always,
mm-hmm.
Where you pull everything forward into a contemporary moment.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that you plan? I mean, is that constructed, or does that just sort of happen when you write? Is it part of your flow?
I think it's part of my flow. I think I definitely feel like those things, you're mixing elements in that sense, and somehow you bring another element that is not expected into the work. It changes it. It brings worlds together. It sort of affects it on such a profound level. Yeah, that's just I feel like I'm juxtaposed against every little room I walk into. You know, I feel like there's this Indian guy walking into the room, and that guy changes the feeling of the room. But I think everybody kind of has that. You know, I think it's a new world. You know, I mean, if you go anywhere. Everybody is, you know, even if you go down to another country, you definitely see very American influences. Then you see their sort of cultural influences, and you see them sort of meeting and reinvigorating or completely, you know, they're sort of meshed.
Right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, let's go with you, then we'll go.
How do the rhythms of your native language influence the rhythms of English?
That's interesting, because I gave a reading in Atlanta just a couple of days ago. And then a friend of mine, Santi Fraser, who's also a poet, talked about, he's a Choctaw poet, and he was, after I gave my reading, he's like, wow, you're all, it's all iambic pentameter, you know. He was like, and then I was like, oh, that's interesting. And then I was like, oh, I don't want to be, you know, I don't want to sound like those poets that are all reading in iambic pentameter. And so it kind of jarred me a little bit. But then I was thinking about a friend of mine and I guess a colleague of mine who is the president now of Diné College, which is a tribally owned college on the Navajo Reservation. And I read for them in February, and then when he introduced me, he started talking about Navajos. The structure of the language, the sound of the language. And he mentioned one of our philosophies, which is "Sana e bik ehojon," you know. But the way he said it was more, it had those kind of same rhythms, the same patterns. So I kind of feel like I do somehow, my creative roots sort of stem out of that, the way of speaking. It finds its way in the work, the songs, the chants, you know. But it's all in English, so. It's all about creating a new language, really. So yeah, they do come from that space.
This is sort of the continuation on that, but I took your advice and closed my eyes, except for the last poem that you did, and happened to have them open when you started, and noticed you had your eyes closed, and I don't know how you resided them before, but it struck me immediately of oral tradition.
Mm-hmm.
It made me wonder about, and you mentioned in that last poem about your grandmother's stories, and I wonder if you could talk about your oral tradition of your people and how that informs or influences your writing, your poetry, which is sort of, in my sense would be, it's some sort of hybrid,
mm-hmm.
of written script and oral presentation. Just however that strikes you.
Yeah, it's definitely there. Like my next book, I feel like I should just put it out as a CD or something, you know, because people always say that when they read the work, or I'll get a book and put like please read out loud or please have somebody read it to you, because I do think it comes to life when you read it with, because there are some poets that read strict. I mean, they write for the page, you know, and the other poets that write for it to be spoken. I know that the culture I come from, everybody's always telling stories. Like, I feel like there's always, that's the exchange, that's the communication, is a story. You know, they're not, it's not big, you know, nobody will build a fire and stand around and tell stories, you know. I mean, but, you know, as you drive into town, you hear these incredible stories, and everybody has them. And I just feel like it's just natural. I didn't really ever think of it otherwise. It just, when I came to this stuff, it just came naturally as it is, without any sort of self-edits. So I feel like I have like long lines in these poems, and I kind of read these poems as if they're like musical sort of notes. The longer the line goes, the more invested I am in taking out that line all the way to the edge. Sometimes there's no period, and I will lose my breath at the end of the stanza. So they're meant to be taken as is on the page and meant to be read out loud. That would be more important to me, is like having you guys come to a reading and actually that you can experience a reading and leave here feeling like you somehow experienced something, you know, a little different and as you walk out. Because I've been to a lot of readings and I didn't experience anything, you know. So I want to create that kind of space too. So it's a... I'm glad you picked up on it. Thank you.
You find as you write longer and more years that you become closer to your roots, or do you become more universal?
I think you become more universal. You know, I think as you get older, there's a lot of elders in here. I mean, as you get older, you have a different kind of space. I'm still beginning, you know. And I always kind of, especially when I read to my own people, I always feel kind of weird that I'm reading, you know, standing up in the front of the room, in front of all these people who've lived lives, you know, And then they're asking me questions. I'm like, this is kind of strange. Why are you asking me questions when I should be asking you questions, you know? But I have to kind of always step outside of that. But I don't know. I don't know what, I don't know. I don't know if it's going to ever be universal in the most beautiful sense. I think there are always edges. There's always a, I guess, skin at the edge of those places. That we have a point of reference, we have a place. And also the way we speak, I think, somehow shapes our understanding of the world.
So do you feel you're writing other people's stories more than your own?
No, I think I'm writing my story. Yeah, I think I'm, and a lot of younger Navajos come up to me and they really identify with my work. Whereas the older people don't. You know, there's a kind of disconnect with my work, but that's understandable. You know, I come from a different place. So I once spoke to Lucy Tapajanza, who's a, you know, well-known Navajo poet. She's sort of the matriarch of Navajo poetry. And she's saying, like, how she wants to, her work, to speak to the average person on the reservation, you know, to that, to her uncle, her grandmother. She wants her work to sort of speak to them. My work, I trusted my intuition. I trusted my space, my vision at the time. I could have easily said, okay, well, I'm gonna go ahead and try to write some traditional stories or something, you know, but I wrote a book that completely exists in a different kind of space. And maybe it's rooted in that space, but it allowed, you know, the engine to sit in the pond rusting, you know, it allowed those things to occur. So it was kind of, I was afraid. I mean, even titling it Shapeshift, you know, I was really scared to put it out there. But that's what every artist has to do. You know, you just have to trust yourself and jump off into the void, and then an island will build itself around you. It's kind of how I look at it.
Ancestral memory. If so or not, how does that or has that shaped your voice? You talk about becoming a poet. I mean, we're in contemporary times.
Mm-hmm.
You are a contemporary poet,
mm-hmm.
but you're also rooted in history. You said you write from history.
Mm-hmm.
So has that been a big part of developing your voice? Did you come to your first early work? Did you find I have a voice and you stuck with it? And, you know, of course, that first half.
Yeah.
It's very interesting.
She asked about ancestral voice. I don't know too much. I don't know right now. I do know that somehow language, our understanding of, there is a growing number of Navajo, young Navajo poets.
Mm-hmm.
And I do see their work all in English. And I do know somehow that they are, and then I also teach in the schools, and sometimes I go to the reservation, I do these poems, or do poetry with Navajo kids. And I do notice there is something similar about their work. Then when I go to a school in Tucson, that something isn't there. And even when I go down to the Tana'atam Reservation, that something is there. So I don't know what it is. I mean, I can't say it's an ancestral voice. I feel like there is a certain sort of, when you live out in the desert, you have certain kind of images that you do use, and that your response to the natural elements is there. You can't help but feel nature, just as here you can't help but feel the cold. Whereas, like, you know, in the desert, you're like an ant underneath a magnifying glass. You know, you're running in and out of houses. So I think that kind of somehow shapes people's understanding. I once taught some kids from a local tribe in Tucson, and each of these kids, it was a big class, it was a very diverse group, but I noticed that some of these kids were native, and they all wrote these poems, and then to them, the deer is really sort of a sacred object. And we sort of pull from that, and the deer became a metaphor. And each of these poems written by these students, the deer was in a different part of its life. So like one poem, without them knowing, of course. This little kid read his poem. It was the deer was being born. They're having a deer dance. Then the deer was doing something. Then some other kid wrote, and the deer had been hit on the highway, and there was electricity running through its veins. So it's, I think it's there, but I don't want to say it's, that's what it is. So.
Do you feel, for example, you're telling people in the habitables of the dangers of encroaching civilization, and number bits and pieces, in which, shall we say, tears away at that fabric?
Mm-hmm.
Are you sort of warning, giving a warning that you have to preserve your civilization?
I think we need to preserve our language and keep it going. Because for some reason, language sort of shapes your understanding of the world, and it's such an invisible part of the language, I think, is really, it's there, because that's where perception, I feel like, comes from. The way of life, it's still pretty, on my res, it's still there. You know, we still have a way of life, a culture. But we do bring in things, you know. We've always been known to, you know, the Spanish came and they had sheep, and now we have sheep. You know, we weave rugs out of the sheep. We do silver. You know, all of these things. We're always exchanging things with the cultures outside of us. So, I think that's how we survived for this long. And I think this is just going to be another step: is the growing number of Navajo writers, and seeing what they could do with language and how they could weave this language together. You know, I think that's just, that really feels like it's our culture, maybe everybody's culture. You know. It's changed, even in the 10 years, even 20 years. I mean, I remember growing up and not having electricity in the house, you know, when I was up until maybe 11 or 12 years old, you know, getting water from the spring. There's a whole new generation of kids that don't have that. So their experience is going to be different than mine.
Any of your poets? You had two, and I don't know how to refer to us after listening to you. Mainstream America, whatever.
Yeah.
There was the anthropologist and the taxi driver.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm assuming that those things happened.
Yeah. Well,
and I was wondering whether it's possible for people not of a tribe to connect in some, you know, meaningful way. Have there been some positive experiences?
Oh yeah. Yeah, there's lots of positive. I was just juxtaposing, I guess, for the longest time, especially I lived in Santa Fe, you know, and I just always saw exhibits of Native people behind glasses. And I always felt like, wow, we're still living here, but we're on exhibit constantly. Somebody's just jumping in and rides you around or something. So that was really speaking to that. And then there was an anthropologist who was at a ceremony, you know, and I was like, what are you doing here? You know, what's your story? The cab driver is actually from Africa. Yeah. So we were having an intertribal dialogue, you know, and he was like really excited. There's some natives in his car, you know. He was like, where are you guys from? And I always get that. One time I got off the subway in Chicago, and I went to Dunkin' Donuts, and then there was a person, I'm assuming he was maybe from India or something. But he looked at me, and he's like, you're not from this country, are you? Where are you from? You know, he just couldn't figure me out. I'm like, well, we're from here, you know. But those points are always kind of interesting, you know. The cab driver was really nice, but I think that was just that part of the poem. Because you know, you're labeled American Indian, you're labeled Native American, you're labeled Indigenous, you're labeled Navajo, you're labeled Diné. You know, then who I am essentially is Bitterwater from my mom's line. So all those identities are piled up on us and kind of sinking underneath them. So yeah. So you had a question?
Do you feel that you have a more natural affinity with other Indian or South American or Spanish writers? Is there more of an affinity in your selection of readers than when you wrote of Neruda, perhaps?
Mm. That was interesting, because when I wrote this long piece, I got a lot of people were asking if I had read Neruda or Lorca. you know, these Spanish poets, and I really hadn't up to that point. And so I was writing, I mean, even my earlier writing was really had these surreal elements, but they just came from the desert, just from where I live. You know, it's very hallucinating if you're out there in the baking in the sun, you know, the lizard starts talking to you or something. But I just feel like it just comes from where I come from. I mean, if, like I was talking about these students, these kids are going to be writing stuff like that too. So I feel like it's a very Southwestern, very, you know, the desert. You know, you certainly have, it's a different kind of life. It's a different way of living, and the horizon stretches forever. Mountains turn purple, sky turns pink, you know. It's a very strange place, beautiful place, but it operates differently. I like all poets as long as they have heart. I think if they have some sort of deepness that they don't choose to be poets, but they have to be poets. But I appreciate everybody for writing. Everybody should write a poem, you know. So, thank you. Okay, one more, then I think we got it.
You said you've lived in Tucson for 5 years,
uh-huh.
And after what you described, you're going back and forth,
uh-huh.
both, I guess, to the Native Americans that are in the Tucson area,
mm-hmm.
and then I gather you go back to your family.
Yeah.
And I assume that's comfortable.
Yeah.
You'll be back and forth. Aid me as to a timeline. When was it you said you first left the reservation? And then the first poem you said you're grieving your grandfather's death, what year was that?
Oh, that was probably about 3 years after I left, you know. I grew up out there all my life, and then I went to Santa Fe to the school, and then my grandfather passed, and then, you know, now I'm living in Tucson. So yeah, I mean, I didn't go too far away, you know, Tucson. five hours from my home is good enough. I, like, people always ask me if I ever move out here or New York or something. That's where poets go, you know. I'm like, yeah, but I don't know. I'm Southwestern. I feel at home in that place, in that landscape. You know, it just feels right. Yeah, thank you. So thank you all. I hope you had a good time. And